The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, it was still a weird-ass week of football. You know, I thought week four we would get a little bit more clarity of what type of teams we've got going on, if we've got some real teams, if we got some fake teams. And to be quite honest, we did not get any of those answers because there were still some weird losses, some weird wins. And then, of course, the usual suspects keep on winning. So let's start right off with the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Indianapolis Colts. I expected this one to be a close battle just because both teams, in my opinion, are pretty equal, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And the Colts pretty much dominated this one from start to finish, which was really shocking because you don't really know what you're getting from the Colts so far this year. We don't really know if they're a real team, whereas the Steelers, they were undefeated headed into this game. Their defense has just been completely demolishing every opponent that they face right now. It's just offensively, they really haven't been able to get going. But in this one, I would say that this was probably Justin Fields' best game, even though it ended up being a Pittsburgh Steelers loss. The Colts won 27-24, but Justin Fields went 22 for 34, 312 yards and a touchdown. He did have some stupid kind of like, he had a fumble that was dumb, but I mean, come on, you're not going to be perfect in every game. I just kind of feel like overall Fields is now really starting to make the case to continue to be the starter each and every week for this Pittsburgh Steelers offense. But on the opposite side of the ball, the Indianapolis Colts, you know, Anthony Richardson, he was going off. And then unfortunately, he suffered a hip injury. Doesn't sound like it's going to be anything serious. Who knows really at this point, but it didn't look very serious. I guess he could have come back into the game if he really wanted to. But they ended up putting good old Joe Flacco back in there, and he ended up just maintaining the course for the Colts. Their defense held it down, and then Jonathan Taylor, he had a solid game, 88 yards and a touchdown. Michael Pittman Jr. had 113 yards to add to it. So it just was an overall good game from the Indianapolis Colts. And like I said, even though the Steelers lost, Justin Fields probably had his best game of the season, and to me, basically just cemented the fact that he is the starting quarterback for the team, and you really can't take it away from him at this point. But Colts did get the win 27-24. Then we had another close one between the New Orleans Saints and the Atlanta Falcons. This one was going back and forth and back and forth from the very bitter end until Younghoe Koo nailed a 58-yard game-winning field goal for the Atlanta Falcons, 26-24. They walk away with the win. Derek Carr had a solid day, though, 28 for 36, 239 yards. He did have an interception. That was kind of the issue, really, for the Saints, is they made some really boneheaded mistakes throughout the game. Alvin Kamara, he had 77 yards and a touchdown, so he keeps proving that he's still the dude and still really difficult to stop. But overall, you know, it was a typical division battle, and the Falcons were just able to do that much more than the Saints, and the Saints now are 2-2 on the season. Then we had the Los Angeles Rams at the Chicago Bears, and the Bears, shockingly, they dominated this game. It wound up being a close game, 24-18, Bears win, but, you know, you got to give it up to Caleb Williams. You know, speaking of guys like Justin Fields, I felt like had his best game. I feel like Caleb Williams had his best game for the Bears. He actually led them on 4 scoring drives. So it was actually not just because the defense really dominated. I mean, they had Matthew Stafford on his ass. I believe they had 3-4 sacks on the day, and they really just took it to Matthew Stafford. That's for sure. But on the opposite side of things here, on the offensive side of the ball, Caleb Williams actually did. He held it down. He had a really solid game. He made sure to really not have any bad throws, make any major mistakes, and the Bears were able to hang on to this one 24-18. I'd say it was an overall solid game from Caleb Williams, and like I said, probably his best showing so far on the young season for him. Then we had the Minnesota Vikings at the Green Bay Packers, and this one was crazy. The Vikings just looked like they were, I mean, it was annihilation at first. I mean, this was like a 28-7 game headed into halftime by the Vikings. Like, they were just obliterating them. I mean, Jordan Love, he ended up playing in this game, and he ended up having 3 interceptions in this game. So it just was not a good game for him to start. But then the second half got going, and the Packers dropped 22 points in the fourth quarter. Now, to me, it was one of those things where it was just too little, too late for them. The Vikings held on to this one, 31-29, but Sam Darnold, he has been having a fantastic season. The dude's got 10 touchdowns on the year already. He went 20 for 28, 275 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Now, of course, it definitely helps when you've got Justin Jefferson, who just also made some amazing catches yesterday in the game. But back to Jordan Love. Got to talk about a dude who just overcame all the bullshit in the first half. Like I said, the guy had 3 interceptions, ended up 32 for 54, 389 yards, and 4 touchdowns on the day. So he really made a huge comeback for his team. But the Vikings, they just were too much for the Green Bay Packers in the end. I will say, now the Vikings defense has been very top-notch, very stout. They're actually one of the top scoring defenses in the league. So they're really getting it done. They're also getting it done on the ground with Aaron Jones. He had 93 yards on the game as well. His old team, he used to play for the Packers, so he came back and had a solid game. But, I mean, overall, looking at the Vikings defense, it was solid. They did get plowed through just a bit in the fourth quarter. But, I mean, it was just too much Vikings for the Green Bay Packers to handle this one. And the Vikings are 4-0 on the season. Who would have thought? And they are headed to London to play the New York Jets next week. Then we had the Denver Broncos at the New York Jets, speaking of the Jets, and this was a sloppy-ass game. It was terrible weather in New York yesterday, so you could tell, just judging by the score, 10-9, Denver Broncos win. That says it all to me, because I was even like, what is going on in this game? And then when I saw the highlights, I was like, oh, okay. And it was just an overall terrible game from the Jets. And Bo Nix, the quarterback of the Denver Broncos, actually scored his first career touchdown with the Broncos. So he was, and that was the only touchdown of the game. So congratulations to him. But I mean, for the Jets, it was an overall terrible game. Their offense looked atrocious. Their ground attack couldn't get going. Aaron Rodgers was on his ass all day. He was sacked 5 times, and you just cannot do that. You can't do that with, like, Patrick Mahomes at quarterback, a guy who's mobile and can move around and is young. But you really can't do that with Aaron Rodgers. You need Aaron Rodgers standing up, and that's how he avoids injuries as well. But you definitely can't have that from the offense. And they just looked very out of rhythm and out of sync. And we'll see what they got in London this week, because they are playing probably the hottest team in the league right now. But with the way this season has gone, I would not be shocked if next week the Jets beat the Vikings and stop their undefeated streak. But we'll talk about that next week. I'm just saying, this season has been weird as fuck and has stayed weird through this weekend. Then we had the Philadelphia Eagles at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and the Eagles got demolished. I mean, you want to see Baker Mayfield just was basically playing pitch and catch with his wide receivers yesterday. Don't get me wrong. Tampa Bay has fantastic offense. You've got Godwin, you've got Mike Evans, you got a solid offensive line, you've got their running back, I can't remember his name right now, but I was watching him yesterday. He looks pretty solid. So offensively, Buccaneers are pretty damn good. But I mean, this Eagles defense, they couldn't stop shit yesterday. Baker basically just did whatever the fuck he wanted to do, especially to start the game. But the Buccaneers just killed the Eagles, 33-16. Baker Mayfield went 30 for 47 with 347 yards and 2 touchdowns. Mike Evans had 94 yards and a touchdown. And the Eagles just didn't look good at all. Not on offense, not on defense. Jalen Hurts had some more turnovers as well. He didn't look good. And yes, I know he was missing his top 2 receivers, but even so, he wasn't connecting with anybody. And I've even been saying it before. I've been saying that all season long, is that the Eagles just haven't looked good. They haven't looked like they've gotten any type of rhythm offensively or defensively, and it really showed in this one. I mean, the Buccaneers obviously are a pretty solid team right now, but they just absolutely obliterated the Eagles from start to finish. Even when it looked like the Eagles were starting to get a little bit going in the third quarter, I even was like, come on, this is too little, too late. And the Buccaneers, every time they got on offense, basically, they drove right down the field and scored some points. Then we had the Cincinnati Bengals at the Carolina Panthers, and the Bengals were finally able to get into the win column. They won the game 34-24, and it was finally a legitimately good game from the Cincinnati Bengals. Joe Burrow went 22-for-31, 232 yards and two touchdowns. And Ja'Marr Chase had a big game, 85 yards and a touchdown. He had this really amazing 63-yard touchdown where he just was breaking tackles and just making moves and just got all the way. It was a huge playmaker all the way down the field. But just a good overall game from the Cincinnati Bengals. I will say the Panthers, it looks like they're starting to find a running game with Chuba Hubbard. He had 104 yards and a touchdown on the ground. But I mean, with the Panthers, I kind of feel like they're definitely going to be one of those teams where they might get a win here or there. But the Bengals were really hungry for a win. They really needed this win, and they really could not go down 0-4 on the season to the Carolina Panthers, nonetheless. Then we had the Jacksonville Jaguars at the Houston Texans. Speaking of terrible teams, that would be the Jacksonville Jaguars. They blew another one. They actually had a chance to win this one. But C.J. Stroud, do what C.J. Stroud does in his young career. This guy, he's pretty solid when it comes down to the comeback wins. And that's basically what happened in this one. In the fourth quarter, he was able to drive his team down the field, get the game-winning touchdown to send the Texans home with the win 24-20, and to send the Jaguars home 0-4 on the season. And I mean, really, this was a division battle. So I'm not shocked that the Texans kind of struggled in this one, but I got to say, I'm kind of shocked that the Texans' offense really hasn't been as electric as I expected them to be. In my opinion, I really actually thought the Texans were probably going to be one of the best offenses in the league. It might have something to do with Mixon. He's been injured the last couple of weeks, hasn't played, so maybe that's playing a part in this. And I'm not saying their offense looks terrible. It's just it kind of feels like they've been, you know, playing through mud a lot lately, and it just feels like they haven't really got quite in sync just yet. C.J. Stroud, though, he went 27 for 40, 345 yards and two touchdowns. And his receiver of the day was Nico Collins, who had 151 yards and a touchdown as well. But man, the Jaguars, this team, they just can't ever get on a winning track. It feels like this team is going to be terrible forever. Even with Trevor Lawrence, I kind of feel like, he doesn't get as much criticism as he would if he were on if he played for the Cowboys or the Giants, this guy would be getting criticized like crazy. I mean, you got to really take a look at it. We were talking about Trevor Lawrence in the draft like he was Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning, of course, ended up being one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. And yes, those are lofty expectations, and those are not expectations that Trevor Lawrence put on himself. But still, he was the number one overall pick. He was a dude who everybody was talking about. And so far for the Jaguars, he has not been that dude. He doesn't really have any games you could point to where you're like, oh, wow, look at that. He had the one playoff game, what was it, like 2 years ago, where they made that huge comeback against the Chargers in the second half where they were down like 28-0 and they ended up winning the game. But that's about it. I mean, overall, the Jaguars have not been a consistent team. They have not been a winning team. They have not been a threat. They've been in the worst division like his entire career, and they have yet to really do anything with that. And they just look like a terrible team. I don't know what is going to happen with this team. I would not be shocked if Doug Peterson ends up losing his job pretty quick here. But I really, you look at Trevor Lawrence, and the dude just signed a huge extension. Was it this year or last year? I think it was this year. He signed that huge extension. And so basically the Jaguars are stuck with him, and he really hasn't proven shit. And to start the season off 0-4, And it's not like the Jaguars haven't tried either. I mean, they've been building up their offensive line. They've been building up their ground attack. They've been building up their receiving core. They've been building up the defense. It's just this team doesn't put shit together. And here they are at 0-4 being the usual Jaguars. It's just crazy. I don't know how they're ever going to be able to turn it around. But I feel like Trevor Lawrence, we all need to start criticizing the dude just a bit. I'm not saying he's washed. I'm not saying he can't turn things around, but I'm just simply pointing out the dude has not done shit. He has not been consistent. His team hasn't been consistent. They haven't been a threat. Nobody looks at the Jaguars or really even Trevor Lawrence as a threat in this league. So I think people should start saying it out loud, especially with how shitty they've been playing. They're 0-4. Then we had the Washington Commanders at the Arizona Cardinals, and the Commanders just commanded this game. 42-14 is what they ended up winning with. Jaden Daniels continues his amazing rookie season. He went 26 for 30, so he only missed four passes, 233 yards and a touchdown. He's a force through the air and on the ground. He's extremely accurate, and he's really commanding this offense. This offense looks really solid under him right now. I don't know if this is going to be a long-lasting, season-long thing, but I mean, to go into Arizona and dominate them the way they did, you got to give them their props on that one. So nothing to say about the Cardinals. Marvin Harrison Jr., I guess, he had a touchdown, so that was good for them. Connor, he also had a pretty solid game, 140 yards and a touchdown, but I mean, they only ended up with 14 points, so yeah, not a really good game from the Cardinals, but I personally wasn't expecting much from the Cardinals this season at all. Then we had the New England Patriots at the San Francisco 49ers. 49ers dominated this one 30-13. It kind of ended up getting a little bit close there in the end, but I mean, real talk, the Niners defense just completely demolished. Jacoby Brissett had no time to think yesterday, let alone pass the ball. But he looked terrible. Their offense looked terrible. Brock Purdy, he had a solid game, 15 for 27, 288 yards and a touchdown. Jordan Mason also had a solid game, 123 yards and a touchdown. Jennings had a good game, 88 yards. So Niners just did what the Niners do. You know, they are coming off of a two-game losing streak. So, I mean, they did not want to lose to the shitty-ass Patriots. The Patriots could not block anything yesterday. And then, of course, they had a fumble late for Nick Bosa caused a fumble on Brissett. That was late in the game, basically to seal the win. But not a good showing from the Patriots. Not that we were really expecting it, but complete domination from the Niners, as expected in that one. Then we had the Cleveland Browns at the Las Vegas Raiders, and hilarity ensued in this one to me because Deshaun Watson do what Deshaun Watson do these days, and it was pretty hilarious. He actually drove his Browns down the field to get in position to potentially, because, you know, they're down 20-16 at this point, so they need the touchdown. They are fourth and goal, and of course, you know, Deshaun's running around in the backfield and can't get shit going, and the Raiders end up winning this one. And you know what? The Raiders didn't have Devontae Adams in this one. They didn't have Max Crosby in this one, so they were missing basically their two best players on offense and defense. And they ended up getting this win over the Browns 20-16. I will say the Browns definitely look like one of the worst teams in the league. Them and the Jaguars, I would say, probably have no hope at anything other than complete trash this year. But the Browns have been consistently terrible. And to lose the way they did yesterday, because they actually did. They had a good shot. I think they were at like the 5-yard line, 6-yard line, 7-yard line, in that area. I mean, it was fourth and goal, so obviously they had four options to get into the end zone and failed all four times. So congratulations, Browns. That is what you get with that stupid idiot, Deshaun Watson, as your quarterback. But the Raiders walk away with a nice solid win there, 20-16. And we had the Kansas City Chiefs at the Los Angeles Chargers, and as I said on Friday's show, I was not picking against the Chiefs because Mahomes has dominated his division, and until somebody proves otherwise, I am not picking against the Chiefs, especially when it comes to their stupid-ass division. And I was so tempted to pick the Chargers, but I've done it, I want to say, the last 2 years, maybe even 3 years. I have been that person where I'm like, yeah, the Chargers are going to do it. They're finally going to win, and then they fucking lay an egg. Well, guess what? They did the exact same thing they always do, lay a fucking egg. Chargers came right out the gate and looked like they were going to dominate this one. They had two turnovers right off the bat. Fumble on the first drive, then an interception on the following drive. Then they go right up 10-0. And it's looking like, oh, man, maybe the Chargers are going to show out in this one. And, of course, the Chiefs get it going. And, you know, they don't blow them out of the water, but the Chiefs are able to do what the Chiefs are able to do, and that is get the big plays when they need to, score when you have to, and that's exactly what they fucking did. The Chargers couldn't score after the first quarter. They couldn't score. They couldn't any time. And the one time they got into the red zone, I was laughing because I'm like, you just take the points. I know it was, I believe it was fourth and goal, they only needed like inches or a yard. And I know, if it's fourth and inches, you almost always go for it. But in my opinion, when you are playing a team like the Kansas City Chiefs, who always win, who always score, and you cannot leave points on the board, you need to take the 3 points. And I was watching the game, and I'm like, the Chargers need to take 3 points. And you know what? They did lose by 7. So in the end, those 3 points technically wouldn't have mattered. But you never know. It could have changed the complete trajectory of the game because they would have scored the 3 points. Then they would have had to kick the ball off. And who knows? Things might have gone a little bit differently. And maybe the Chiefs wouldn't have scored a touchdown. Who knows? But the Chargers did not take the points like I thought they should have. And they did not score the touchdown. They didn't even get the first down. So they blew it. And then the Chiefs did what the Chiefs do, ended up making a drive down the field and scored their touchdown. Man, Patrick Mahomes, there was one right before the end of the half. The 7 points that they scored right before going into halftime, he just bombs it up to Xavier Worthy, who's just right there, makes the 54-yard touchdown. And that was basically all they needed. But like I said, that's what the Chiefs do. And the Chiefs ended up with the win. Their defense has been stout. I mean, they've really been carrying them. Chiefs got the win 17-10. Rashee Rice, they haven't said what exactly his injury is. But it looks like he definitely has a knee injury. Looks like it's going to end up being an ACL injury, which means he's most certainly, if it's a torn ACL, he's missing the rest of the season. If it's just kind of like a sprain or whatever, then he's probably going to be out a couple of months. But even with the loss of him, a lot of people are just kind of losing their minds. And I'm like, did you not watch what the Chiefs did last year? I mean, basically, it was this same song and dance where it was like, oh, the defense is dominating and this offense is barely getting by. But you know what? They barely got by. And guess what? They ended up winning the Super Bowl. So I think the Chiefs will be all right without Rashee Rice. Like I said, they threw a bomb to Xavier Worthy. And I know I'm a Longhorns fan, so I know all about Worthy. I've seen the dude and what he can do. And he's a beast. I think Worthy will be just fine. He's probably going to make some rookie mistakes, but I'm going to keep it real. I don't see any problems for the Chiefs without Rashee Rice. Everybody, like I said, everybody's losing their mind today, acting like they need to make all these big-ass trades. And I'm like, nah, this feels like last season for me with the Chiefs. And like I said, last season they won the Super Bowl. So I think they're okay. As long as they have Patrick Mahomes, this team is good. And P.S., that defense is killer still. Just like they were last year. Don't worry about the Chiefs. They good. They're 4-0, people. Then Sunday Night Football ended up being a demolishing. Buffalo Bills at the Baltimore Ravens, and the Ravens just took it to the Bills. 35-10. There was nothing for Josh Allen yesterday. He was on his ass all night long. This is what I mean. When there's a game that it is just Josh Allen and Josh Allen only showing up, this is what the game's going to look like. A complete ass kicking. He's going to be on his ass all night. He's going to potentially get injured because it looked like there was one point last night where he took a hit and he was on the ground for a minute. And it looked like shit was bad, but he ended up finishing the game, still playing and everything. But It was not good. Lamar Jackson went off. He had a couple. He actually had 3 touchdowns on the night, so he went off. But it was all about Derrick Henry, who was 1 yard short of 200 yards last night. 199 yards and a touchdown. And by the way, that touchdown he scored was literally the first play from scrimmage for the Ravens last night. Their very, very first play, boom, right out the gate, Derrick Henry takes off for a touchdown. And that was basically the rest of the night for the Buffalo Bills, just staring at Derrick Henry's ass in the end zone. That was really it. Lamar Jackson pretty much had his way with them last night. Derrick Henry had his way with them last night. The Ravens defense, just like I said, Josh Allen on his ass all night, and they made sure he felt every hit. They made sure he knew that they were there on every single play, and it just was not a good game from the Buffalo Bills. But hey, they're 3-1, and they lost to the Baltimore Ravens, who look like one of the best teams in the league, at least right now. Like I said, weird-ass week still heading into week 4. And it's been such a weird NFL season. So who knows what we're going to get from these teams. But right now, the Ravens look pretty damn good, especially on the ground game. Derrick Henry's starting to really plug away in these last 2 games. And he stays healthy. You really got to watch out for that Ravens team. All right, moving on to the Monday Night Football games. We once again have 2 Monday Night Football games tonight, beginning with the Tennessee Titans at the Miami Dolphins. Right now, the Titans are a 1.5-point favorite. I feel like the Dolphins, they're pretty much fucked right now. They are on their 3rd-string quarterback. It's going to be Tyler Huntley. He had his couple of seasons up in Baltimore backing up Lamar Jackson, so he does have some games under his belt. He has about a half a season, really, under his belt for sure. Because there was that one season a couple years ago where Jackson was out for most of the year. So he ended up playing a lot, but come on, he ain't going to be lighting nobody up. He does have a lot of weapons to work with, but I'm going to keep it real. I'm not really expecting much from Huntley. The Titans, on the other hand, they've had their moments, but a lot of these moments have ended up being terrible moments from Will Levis, mostly. Their young quarterback, who's just been making really stupid throws, really dumb Superman passes. He just really needs to get it together and just do his job. Pass the ball, make the easy throws. If they just got to simplify everything down for him just to kind of build his confidence to get it going, that's what they got to do. But he's got to stop with those boneheaded plays because he's cost this team way too many wins already. There are 2 wins that should be on their win column that he personally has cost them. So I think they're going to get it together tonight because Miami, they are reeling with the injuries and you just don't know what's going to happen, especially with the 3rd-string quarterback. And like I said, the Titans, they're there. It's just the dumb, boneheaded mistakes have cost them. I think tonight they're going to put together a solid game, and I've got the Titans winning this one 24-10. And then with my head-to-head matchup with Simon Ruvalcaba, he actually has Miami winning this one. He's looking at this one going into overtime. He has Miami winning in overtime 23-20, which honestly I would not be shocked by because both of these teams are terrible. It's just for me, I look at when you're on your 3rd-string quarterback, that's like the definition of a reeling team right now. And then we have the Seattle Seahawks at the Detroit Lions. Right now, the Lions are a 4.5-point favorite. Seattle's just really come on the season strong. They are probably one of the most surprising teams. I mean, they've got a new coach. They offensively, they're pretty much the same team, but defensively, who the hell knows what we were getting with them. But so far, they've really been locking it down, both on offense and defense, really taking control offensively with the ground attack. With a lot of different guys too. Kenny Walker, he started out the season hot, and then he's been injured the last couple of games. So Charbonnet, he's come in and been the dude. But so really, their ground attack has been getting it done. And like I said, defensively, they've been taking care of business too. Detroit, basically the exact same thing. Really taking care of things on the ground and offensively. Offensive line is amazing, and they're really taking care of the ball. And then on the defensive side of things, Hutchinson is basically unstoppable at this point. He's leading the league with sacks right now. I believe he's got 6.5 off the top of my head. So this guy's pretty much unstoppable. I'm looking at this game where Seattle, I don't know if I really believe in them yet, and I kind of feel like this is going to be one of those wake-up call games for them. I don't think they're going to get their asses beat, but I definitely think Detroit's defense is going to take it to them. I think Aiden Hutchinson's going to have another big night. And I just look at the Lions. I feel like they're going to control the clock. I feel like they're going to control the ball movement. I think they're going to control the line, both on offense and defense. And I think they're really just going to have overall control of this game. I do think it's going to be a close battle because Detroit has yet to really have an extremely dominating game where they make it really convincing. And I don't think Seattle is terrible. I think they're definitely going to make it difficult for Detroit tonight. But I do have Detroit winning this one 27-23. And Simon also has Detroit winning this one 31-21. All right, now let's move on to the baseball playoffs. Now, we do have a doubleheader today to decide the last two wildcard spots in the National League. And actually, now we only have one spot left. The New York Mets just won the first game of the doubleheader between the Atlanta Braves 8-7 in a crazy-ass back-and-forth game. I mean, Atlanta was dominating this one from the jump. They had a 3-0 lead, I think, going into the sixth, seventh inning. And then the Mets had this huge rally. They got it going. They took the lead. And then Atlanta took the lead back. But then in the ninth inning, Lindor comes up to bat. He hits a home run. And the Mets take the lead and never look back. They get the win 8-7, and the New York Mets have clinched a playoff spot. We don't know who they're playing just yet because the second game of this doubleheader is going to determine that. If they sweep it, I mean, obviously the Mets are already in, but if the Mets sweep this and win the second game, then the Diamondbacks will be in. If the Braves win this last game, then the Braves will be in. So we're basically just waiting to see if the Braves or the Diamondbacks are going to be the last team in on the National League wild card. With that being said, I'm still making my playoff predictions, even though the field isn't officially set, because to be quite real, I don't think the Mets, the Braves, or the Diamondbacks are getting past the next round. The Mets and the Braves, simply because they are playing a doubleheader today. First of all, neither team has really been consistent at all, and the Mets have been very up and down as of late. And playing a doubleheader the day before, you got to play wild card series, I just think it's going to kind of take the wind out of their sails, and I really don't see either of those teams having a chance in the next round. And then the Diamondbacks, they've also been a team that's really not been playing inconsistent, or they've been playing very inconsistent, and in my personal opinion, I actually don't think they deserve to make the playoffs because they really didn't do anything towards the end. You know, they had their moment a couple weeks ago where it looked like they were going to get it going, and then they just barely hung on. So I don't really think they deserve a playoff spot, but even if they make it, I don't think they're going to make any noise. So I'm going to make my playoff predictions today, and also just lead all the way up to who I believe is going to end up as the World Series champion when it's all said and done. So let's start off with the American League and the seeding and how that turned out. The New York Yankees are the number one overall seed, number two seed the Cleveland Guardians, number three seed the Houston Astros, number four seed the Baltimore Orioles, number five seed the Kansas City Royals, and the number six seed the Detroit Tigers. Then in the National League, the number one overall seed is the Los Angeles Dodgers, number two overall seed the Philadelphia Phillies, number three seed Milwaukee Brewers, number four seed San Diego Padres, and as I said, the number five and the number six seed is just going to be determined by this last game that the Mets and Braves are currently playing right now. So here's how I believe the wild card round is going to turn out. In the American League wild card, we have the Detroit Tigers versus the Houston Astros. I think that the Tigers, first of all, this is old manager A.J. Hinch going up against his old team, the Houston Astros. Like I said before, he was released by them during the whole cheating scandal. He was suspended for the year, and then the Tigers ended up signing him. And now he's completely turned around this team. And really nobody had any expectations for them at all. But here they are. They made a huge, huge playoff run. And they are not a team you should overlook, especially the Astros. With that being said, though, to me, the Astros are the overall better team. They have the playoff experience. And while I think the Tigers have made a nice little run here, and I do think they will make the series interesting, I've got the Houston Astros moving on in three games. Then we have the Kansas City Royals versus the Baltimore Orioles. These two teams, I really struggled on who I was going to pick in this matchup because the both of them headed into the playoffs. They just backed their way into the playoffs. They barely hung on to even make it. And neither one of them was convincing in the end. Neither one of them looks strong. So I kind of look at this one as a who cares, because I don't think either team is going to be making any noise in the next round. But with that being said, when I look at the rosters and when I look at who I think is just the overall better team, I do think it's the Baltimore Orioles. So I have the Orioles winning this one in three games. Then in the National League wildcard matchups, we have somebody versus the Milwaukee Brewers. And like I said, I don't believe the New York Mets, the Atlanta Braves, or the Arizona Diamondbacks really have a shot at them. The Mets and the Braves, simply because they're playing a doubleheader, and that is really going to take the wind out of their sails, at least for the first game, for sure. And then the Diamondbacks, like I said, not really playing good baseball. So I just look at the Brewers. They've got a good, solid starting pitching lineup. They can score. They have no issue scoring. And I actually have the Brewers sweeping whoever it is they end up facing. And then in the second National League wildcard matchup, we will have either the Mets, Braves, or Diamondbacks against the San Diego Padres. And same reasoning with them that I do with the Brewers. I think the Padres are a better overall team than what's coming in. As a matter of fact, the Padres have been one of the hottest teams, right up there with the Detroit Tigers. Those are the two basically best teams coming in to the playoffs right now. And the Padres have depth. They have depth at starting pitching. They can score. They're great on the defensive side of things. They have vets. They have young guys. They're a nice mixture of a good team here. So I have the Padres also sweeping whoever it is they face, because like I said, Mets and Braves playing a doubleheader heading into the playoffs usually does not bode well for teams, because you're just completely tired. You played a doubleheader, for Christ's sake. So I think whoever goes in for those last two wildcard spots, it doesn't really matter, because I think the Brewers and the Padres are moving on. So my ALDS matchups are the Houston Astros versus the Cleveland Guardians. The Guardians, I don't know how they ended up with the number two overall seed. I think their good start to the season, how they really just got a great start and really never looked back until the second half of the season. And not even like the beginning of the second half. They really kind of started to fall off. I'd say August-ish is when you really started to worry about the Guardians. But I felt like their big lead really helped them, especially in their division. So here they are at the number two overall seed. But to me, they are not a good team. I am not convinced. I would be shocked if they even really won a game in this series, because that's just how much I don't believe in them. I mean, outside of Class A and Ramirez, they're a very shaky, weird team. They don't have a lot of depth at the starting pitching position, and they don't have a lot of offense past Ramirez. You know, Kwan, he could get going, but he's been very streaky as of late. So the Guardians, I don't have a lot of faith in them, whereas the Astros, they've been here before. Starting pitching is looking pretty solid, and, you know, it's really difficult for me to pick against the Astros, especially in the playoffs. So I actually have the Astros sweeping the Guardians in this matchup. And then the second matchup I have in the ALDS is the Baltimore Orioles versus the New York Yankees. Like I said, with the Orioles, they haven't looked good at all. And it's been like the last month they've looked pretty bad. The Yankees, very streaky, but hey, they were able to hold on. They're starting pitching, starting to put it together. Their offense has really been good so far. The injuries, they've been able to keep them down a bit for now. So, and this is a division matchup. These are two teams that know each other well, but the Yankees, to me, are a better team than the Orioles. At least right now they are. So I have the Yankees winning this matchup in four games. Then my NLDS matchups are the Milwaukee Brewers versus the Philadelphia Phillies. To me, the Phillies are the best team in the playoffs right now. I think they have the best starting pitching lineup. I think they have the best batting order. I think they have their weakness is definitely their bullpen, but their bullpen has had their moments as well, where they're able to be strong and put it together. And to be quite honest, with the starting pitching lineup they have pitchers who could literally go to the seventh inning. And this is the playoffs that we're talking about. So these are guys who are definitely going to be pushing themselves to the limits and potentially be pitching complete games just so they can make sure their team wins, because this is the playoffs. It happens all the time. So don't be shocked, because their starting pitching is deep. They've got three dudes who hit double figures in the wins this year. And they're all three dudes who could be starting pitchers for any team right now, and they're going to be difficult to score runs on. They can score runs. I mean, Schwarber, Harper, Trey Turner. Like, this Phillies team, I've felt all season long, has been the best team. I've felt like it's going to be really difficult for anybody to get by them, and I just don't see the Brewers being that team to get by them. So I have the Philadelphia Phillies winning this matchup in four games. Then my second matchup in the NLDS is the San Diego Padres versus the Los Angeles Dodgers. And this one, the Dodgers, I'm going to tell you straight up, over the years, choke artists in the playoffs. That's pretty much their MO. It doesn't matter who they have. And when you really, really look at things, yes, Ohtani has had a fantastic season, but he's pretty much been it. Yes, they've had Betts, they've had Freeman. They haven't really had any issue scoring runs. Their issue, though, is at the starting pitching position. Also in the bullpen, not really strong. The Padres, on the other hand, they ain't afraid of the Dodgers. They are not afraid of the Dodgers in any way, shape, or form. They've actually knocked them out of the playoffs a couple seasons ago, and I think the Padres are going to do it again because the Padres are deep at the starting pitching position. They can score runs, and I think they can keep up with the Dodgers. So I have the Padres winning this series in five games, because like I said, Dodgers, known choke artists, and really the only shining star this season has been Shohei Ohtani. Not that that's a bad thing, but you look at everybody else, and I go, I don't know. I think the Dodgers are going to lose this one, and I think it's a bad matchup for them because it's the Padres, because the Padres know them, and they aren't afraid at all. They know what the Dodgers are all about, and they know they could beat the Dodgers too. So I have the Padres upsetting the Dodgers in five games. So my ALCS matchup is the Houston Astros versus the New York Yankees. This is going to be an excellent matchup, I believe, just because, first of all, these two teams do not like each other. They always play each other hard, and they match up very well against each other because they have depth at the starting pitching position. But their starting pitchers have been known to get blown up in games. Then you take a look at their bullpens. Very, very shaky bullpens. Then you look at their batting order. Their batting order, both are able to just go off. So don't be shocked if we see like a game where they score, like the score ends up being like 15 to 13, just because both of these teams can score a lot of runs in many different ways too. They both have deep lineups, but they're very similar teams, and I think they will match up very well against each other. But I do have the Yankees edging the Astros out in this one. I've got the Yankees winning in six games, simply just because I think it's kind of finally time for somebody else to just make their way into the World Series other than the Houston Astros and in the American League. And I just feel it's kind of that time. And I think the Yankees will finally get over that hump and make it into the World Series. And we'll see what they got. Then my NLCS matchup is the Philadelphia Phillies versus the San Diego Padres. And in that case, I think the Phillies will just demolish the Padres. I've got the Phillies winning in five games simply because, like I said, I think the Phillies are the most complete team. They're the best team, and they're probably the healthiest team at this point. Padres, you don't know what we're getting from them. This team is so unpredictable. They're, like I said, I've got them beating the Dodgers, but that's mostly because they're a division rival. I've got them getting their asses beat to the Phillies because I just think the Phillies are going to put it together. The Phillies are only a couple years removed from playing in the World Series. They've got a lot of seasoned vets on this team. They've got a lot of strong players on this team, and I just look at the Phillies as being the team to beat, and so I have them easily getting by the Padres in five games. So my World Series matchup is the New York Yankees versus the Philadelphia Phillies. And as I keep saying, to me, the Phillies are the most complete team. I think it's going to be difficult for anybody to beat them. The starting pitching is where I think they have the edge. Because I've watched many years of the playoffs, and starting pitching plays a huge, huge role. Yes, there's always a game where the bullpen has to be the has to be the reason why you win. Then there's always like a weird game where somebody just hits this amazing game-winning home run or game-winning walk-off double or some shit like that. There's always like random occurrences. But one thing you always need and is always a constant is starting pitching. If you have solid starting pitching and they can't score on you, you're money. You're golden. And like I said, the Phillies are deep at starting pitching. Not only do they have three guys who could just be aces on other teams, they have basically five guys. And then their bullpen, like I said, it's been shaky, but I would not be shocked if we see three of these starters go near complete games, and then we don't really have to see much of their bullpen. Or it's just their offense just gets so far ahead that the Yankees are unable to catch up. And that is a problem for the Yankees. Playing catch up for the Yankees is not their game. They're pretty much front runners. Not saying they haven't won any close games, because of course they have. But for the most part, the Yankees are front runners. They need to they play much better with the lead. And if their starting pitchers start getting blown up, they really start to lose confidence, and it becomes more difficult for them to score runs. And like I keep saying, Philadelphia Phillies, I've pretty much had them as my World Series pick from like the first month of the season. They've played the most consistent baseball. Their starting pitching's deep. They have so many different guys who could score. They're great defensively. I haven't even discussed their defense, really. So just to me, the Phillies are the most complete team. They've been right there on the precipice of winning this championship. You know, they had a nice run last year. Like I said, they were in the World Series a couple years ago. So it feels like the Phillies are finally ready to win that championship with this team. And I have the Philadelphia Phillies beating the New York Yankees in the World Series in six games. So that's how I have the MLB playoffs turning out. But we'll see. The wild card begins tomorrow. And then the division series will begin over the weekend. So we'll see where we're at on Wednesday's show with baseball and the playoffs and how everything's going there. And then in a bit of sad news in the NBA, very surprising news as well. Center Dikembe Mutombo died today at the age of 58 years old. He apparently had brain cancer. None of us knew about it. He never announced it, and that's his prerogative, of course. But I'm just saying, it was extremely surprising to see, not only because he was only 58 years old, but none of us really knew he was battling cancer. So it probably turned out to be something where it was one of those things where it just came on and unfortunately took him that quick. But unfortunately, Dikembe Mutombo has died today at the age of 58. One of the best defenders the NBA has ever seen. Four-time Defensive Player of the Year. He was a journeyman who played on the Denver Nuggets, the Atlanta Hawks, the Philadelphia 76ers, the New Jersey Nets. Not the Brooklyn Nets. He played with the Nets when they were in New Jersey. Then he played with the New York Knicks and ended his career with the Houston Rockets. But, I mean, we all know he was known for making those big block shots in the paint and then taking his finger and wagging it in your face like, no, 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 bitch, you ain't getting that on me. But he ended up, he's 20th with career, or he's 20th on the NBA list of career rebounds with 12,359 career rebounds. And he really was one of the best defenders the NBA has ever seen. Had a fantastic career. And just sad news to hear that Dikembe Mutombo passed away today at the age of 58. And not a good way to start the NBA season, because NBA training camps kicked off today. So we're going to be having talking NBA season predictions here in the next, I want to say, week or two. Is it going to be next week? It might actually be next week. Regardless, we're going to be talking NBA here pretty soon, because that shit just kicked off today. But that was not a good way that anybody wanted to start the season off, the NBA season off, because not only that was Dikembe Mutombo very influential just as a center and a great NBA player, but everybody in the NBA pretty much has very nice things to say about the guy, and he was an ambassador for the league. So NBA was in his blood until the day he died. So RIP to Dikembe Mutombo, but I am ready for the NBA season, and we will be discussing NBA here pretty soon. So I will talk to you guys on Wednesday's show. Enjoy the rest of the week of sports, y'all.